Gibbs grinned. "What's in it for us?"
"All the root beer you can drink," Bowie offered.
"We can probably make ourselves available,"
Jameson mused, answering for all of us.
"When is it?" I asked.
"First weekend in August."
"Well, hell, you're not wasting any time," I observed, checking the calendar on my phone.
First weekend in August. Shelby's triathlon. That would require some juggling. Two events that I didn't want to miss.
"I've waited a long-ass time," Bowie said. "And if it were strictly up to me, we'd be getting hitched tomorrow."
"Suits me,"
Jameson mused, looking at the bandages on his fingers.
"My ring is finally done. Now it's just figuring how to pop the question. No interference with your engagement or your wedding, of course."
"Appreciate it, Jame," Bowie said, clinking bottles.
"Now that that's settled, let's talk about Jimmy Bob Prosser getting all tongue-tied around Jonah's mama today,"
Gibson said, stroking the puppy's head.
26. Shelby. "Well, that was an eventful day. Puppies, pigs, and parents," I said, passing Jonah in the hallway outside of the bathroom. He was shirtless. Did the man ever bother with a shirt? And his shorts rode low on his delightfully defined hips. How much half-naked man could a girl nerd take before she snapped? I made a note to research unrequited lust tomorrow. People could die from broken hearts. What were the side effects of unused, inflamed sex organs?
"Yeah, what's with Scarlett surprising everyone with their parents?"
he asked, stretching. The muscles in his chest and abdomen moved hypnotically. "Huh? What?" I said, trying to snap myself out of the physical attraction fugue state.
"Scarlett, what's with her springing our parents on us?"
Tearing my gaze away from his impressive torso, I bent down and picked up Billy Ray. "Maybe it has to do with the fact that she doesn't have any herself," I hazarded a guess. "Maybe she's curious about them? Or maybe she feels like our family is partly her family and she's staking a claim?" Jonah nodded and leaned in to scruff the puppy's head. I caught a whiff of his deodorant and toothpaste.
"He's sleeping with you tonight?"
he asked me. Billy Ray had barely survived 15 minutes in the crate downstairs while we swapped bathroom time. His little yips and pathetic howls were too much for either of us to handle. "We'll give it a try. He's so exhausted he should sleep like a rock," I predicted with new dog mother optimism.
"Night then. Sweet dreams, both of you,"
he said. One more scruff for the puppy, a long, curious look at me, and then Jonah headed into his bedroom. "Looks like it's just you and me tonight, Billy Ray," I muttered. I knew Jonah needed time to get used to the idea of there being an us, no matter how temporary. But I hoped I wouldn't spend the entire summer in a state of unrequited lust. In bed, the novelty of cuddling with the puppy lasted all of 20 minutes. The damn dog seemed to be confused. Nighttime was for sleeping, not for playing and barking and biting the pillows. It went on like that for another half an hour until Jonah burst in without knocking. Wordlessly, he pulled Billy Ray out from under the bed where he'd begun howling. Jonah took the dog and closed my door. Ridiculously relieved, I fluffed my slobbery pillows and settled in for a dog-free sleep. Then the howling and barking started across the hall. It was a small, old house. The walls weren't exactly soundproof. I pulled a pillow over my head. But I was listening now. Some kind of biological motherly instinct had kicked in, and I was rigid with worry that Billy Ray was going to make himself sick if he didn't calm the heck down. I could hear Jonah talking to him in low tones. He could have soothed me to sleep like that, but the dog was having none of it. The clock on the nightstand read 2:35 a.m., and I punched my poor, innocent pillow. I had things to do tomorrow, correction, today, that required a good night's sleep. A swim and a bike ride, lunch with my parents, and 4 solid, uninterrupted hours of working on my paper. I was just on the other side of the flare.
One sleepless night and too many obligations would put me right back where I'd been, and I wouldn't be able to hide it from my parents. "Damn it," I whispered into the pillow. Billy Ray gave a particularly mournful howl, and my feet hit the floor. I was moving on exhausted instinct. I opened Jonah's door with a creak. The man was sitting, still shirtless, on his bed. The puppy was biting at the blanket, snarling playfully. Billy Ray spotted me first and gave a happy yip. "It's not playtime," I said sternly. "He keeps running to the door and whining," Jonah explained. "Does he have to go outside?" He shook his head, yawned. And I remembered that Jonah had a 7 a.m. boot camp class at the high school. "I took him out half an hour ago. I think he wants to go sleep in your room." "Nice try," I said, flopping down on the bed next to him. "He wasn't interested in sleeping in my room either." Jonah's room was significantly bigger. There was a brass queen-size bed, a dresser next to the closet door, and a tiny seating area with two mismatched armchairs under the salt box roof that poked out over the back porch. The window overlooked the backyard and woods. Billy Ray gave up his war with the blanket and trotted over to me. I stroked a hand from head to tail, and he flattened himself like a pancake on the mattress. "Is he going to sleep?" Jonah whispered. "I can't tell if he's fallen asleep or if he's just gearing up for his next bed linen assault." The pup's little belly rose and fell. "You're the damn puppy whisperer," he said. I yawned. "What were we thinking, rescuing a dog?" I sighed. "It's just temporary," he said, returning my yawn. "We'll find the cute little bastard a nice family he can deprive of sleep." I couldn't look at him directly. Jonah's hair was sleep-tousled. The shadow of stubble on his jaw took his sexy factor up another 10 points, and those sleepy green eyes did something strange to my chest region. Sleepy, stubbly man and sweet puppy were making me feel things. Confusing things. Twin pulls of physical attraction and now affection warred for my attention. "I'm going to try to sneak out," I decided. It was pure torture sitting on a bed with Jonah. Shifting on the mattress, I tried to ease away, but Billy Ray rolled to his feet with a disgruntled yip. I moved to the edge of the bed, intent on getting away from sexy, sleepy Jonah. But the pup followed me and pawed pathetically at my leg. He cocked his head to the side and gave me the look. "What's happening?" I whispered. "You're falling in love with him," Jonah yawned, "and he's using it against you." "I don't think he wants me to leave." I was so tired, so very, very tired, and Jonah's bed was so inviting, so very, very inviting. "Just lie down for a few minutes. Maybe he'll settle if he's between us." "Superb idea. I'll just lie down in Jonah's bed and continue not having sex with him." I woke to the loud blaring of an alarm that wasn't my own, followed almost instantaneously by the howl of a puppy in desperate need of the bathroom. "Shit! Don't pee, dude!" My eyelids sprang open and I launched woodenly into a seated position. I was in Jonah's bed. I'd slept with Jonah. Also a dog. The man was scrambling out of bed, and the warmth that was evaporating from my back... The only hypothesis that made sense was that Jonah had been spooning me. I felt my back, hoping for some kind of six-pack ab fossil. Jonah, in a hurry and very focused on not letting Billy Ray pee in his bed, grabbed the puppy and dashed downstairs. I flopped back on the pillow, noting that Jonah's pillow was pushed up next to mine. I'd slept the sleep of the exhausted and missed out on waking up cuddled against my roommate's hard body. My roommate that I wasn't having a physical relationship with. It was a lot of disappointments for 6 o'clock in the morning, I mused.
"Damn it, Billy Ray, you were 2 feet from the door," Jonah grumbled from downstairs.
Well, since I was awake, I might as well get up and tackle that swim, that run, get them out of the way. When I got downstairs, Jonah had a shirt on in the backyard, and there was a clump of paper towels soaking up the puppy pee on the kitchen linoleum. Like I said, a lot of disappointments. Judge Henry Kendall, of missing daughter fame, eyed for federal judge appointment. Bootleg's own Judge Kendall considered for higher calling. Father of teenager missing for 13 years considered for federal judgeship. 27. Shelby. The cabin Scarlett arranged for my parents to rent was halfway up the mountain. It had a front porch with a spectacular view of the lake and town. The green siding made the building seem as though it was part of the forest that surrounded it. It was cute enough that I temporarily forgot to obsess over the fact that I'd woken up in Jonah's bed without having had sex with the man. I sipped my coffee on the blue plaid couch and listened to my parents as they alternated naturally between their two favorite forms of communication, good-natured bickering and finishing each other's sentences. In my professional opinion, James and Darlene Thompson were suitably matched. As their daughter, I thought they were just about perfect. My stint as a social worker had given me an intense sense of gratitude for growing up in the family that I did. My parents were steady, loving, and interested in their kids. "Be gone, woman," my dad said, playfully pushing Mom out of the galley kitchen. "You're cutting the sandwiches wrong," she insisted. "And they'll taste exactly the same," he shot back, wielding a container of mustard in her direction. Laughing, Mom joined me on the couch. Her hair was pulled back in a short tail today, and she was wearing comfortable hiking shorts and a t-shirt. Vacation casual Darlene also had a tube of rosy mauve lipstick in her cargo pocket. After 35 years of marriage, Mom still wore lipstick every day, and Dad still got her flowers on the 17th of every month in homage to their first date. Of course they weren't perfect. Mom hoarded greeting cards. GT liked to joke that she made new friends just to have more birthdays and surgeries to celebrate. And Dad, well, Dad considered himself a handyman when in reality they would be better off calling in a professional. The coat closet light still turned on every time someone used the toaster in their kitchen after Dad's DIY wiring job. "So, before GT and June get here, tell me about this gorgeous roommate of yours," Mom said, tucking her feet up under her on the cushion next to me. "Not only is he gorgeous and built like the human version of a racehorse, but he's also very smart and very nice," I told her. "And you're sure you're just roommates?" Mom prodded. I didn't want to get her hopes up and then dash them when I went back to Pittsburgh or on to wherever my career took me. "Just friends," I insisted. "Just friends for now. Hopefully sex-having friends soon. Have you tried pretending you forgot where your room was and walking into his in a towel?" she asked, her face serious. "Mom! Kidding! Kidding," she promised. "You two looked like you were getting along. And I'd love to see both of my kids living their happily ever afters." Her heart was in the right place, but her nose could stand to be removed from our business. "Speaking of," I said, grasping for a subject change, "what do you and Dad think of June?" "She is abrupt, inflexible, sharply intelligent, and..."
"Absolutely perfect for GT,"
Dad interrupted. He joined us in the living room, a mug of coffee in one hand. My mom beamed at him. "In short, we're thrilled. She's so different from the women he's dated the past few years," she said. My parents were devout believers in karma and tried never to speak ill of anyone. The women my brother had dated before June could be neatly labeled attention-seeking gold diggers, but we were too polite to mention it.
"Tell us more about your survey, Shelby,"
Dad insisted, settling his broad shoulders back into the armchair. He may have been wired to love football, but Dad never shirked his fatherly interest when it came to my studies. I unleashed the nerd girl in me and filled them in on the responses I'd received so far, regaling them with the nuggets of small-town life. Before long, we heard a car in the driveway.
I peered through the front window, watching as GT and June got out of his SUV. They raced around to the hatch. GT carefully lifted the pig out of the back and carefully checked her leash and harness while June gave her a good petting. "Your grand pig is here," I announced. My parents burst through the front door, greeting GT and June and Catherine as if it had been months rather than hours since they'd last seen each other. It made me want to check in on my own little family. "Me. How's BR?" Jonah replied immediately with a picture of the puppy sound asleep on his back, his paws frozen in the air as if mid-run. "Jonah, now the little punk sleeps." I thought of how I'd woken up that morning, with the ghost of Jonah's body heat still warming me. How could I broach the subject without being weirdly clinical about it or awkwardly clingy? "Me. I hope I didn't crowd you last night." "Good. Subtle. Not too pushy." "Jonah."
"Not at all. Thanks for the co-parenting help."
"It was no, you look stunning in the morning and it took all my willpower not to wake you with sex. Baby steps." The more comfortable Jonah felt with me, the easier this friendship would be, the more potential we had. Temporarily, of course. There was a ruckus when my parents trooped back inside with June, GT, and the pig. We sat down to a casual lunch of sandwiches and family patter. June, obviously enamored with her new pet, paused every few moments to check on Catherine or take her picture or give her words of encouragement. My parents took turns shooting indulgent looks at each other, and I was suddenly fiercely glad we were all together.
"There's a woman in the backyard,"
Dad said mildly, his gaze fixed out the window. We abandoned our meals and crowded against the dining room window. We observed as a woman of indeterminate age strolled across the backyard. Her clothes were dirty, but her face and the hair under her battered bootleg cockspurs cap were clean. She had an odd hitch in her stride. "That's Henrietta Van Sickle," June announced, nudging GT to lift up Catherine so the pig could see what we were looking at. "Really?" I pressed closer to the glass. "Who's Henrietta Van Sickle?" Mom asked. "She's the town hermit," I explained.
"I heard she doesn't speak, and she doesn't have indoor plumbing," GT added. "You have a town chicken and a town hermit?" Dad asked.
"Of course. Doesn't everyone?" June frowned.
When Henrietta moved around the side of the house, we followed her from window to window.
"She is most likely heading into town for supplies," June hypothesized. "She makes the trip every 8 to 10 weeks.
"I should go talk to her," I decided, moving toward the door. I didn't know if Henrietta would have access to a computer, but I'd love her input for my survey.
"Is that a good idea?"
Mom asked in her careful, motherly, trying to respect her children's boundaries way.
"It's a great idea," I assured her.
I ducked out the door before anyone else could voice their concerns and jogged down the steps. Henrietta was moving toward the road at a good clip.
"Excuse me," I called after her. "Henrietta?"
The woman continued to walk toward the road. The door opened and closed again behind me.
"Henrietta," June called. "Come meet my pet pig."
The woman paused and turned slowly.
"Come on,"
June said, nudging me and Catherine forward. Henrietta ignored us and crouched down to the pig's level. She held out a wrinkled, ringless hand. Catherine's black nose snuffled the woman's skin.
"She's nice," June told Henrietta.
The woman nodded slowly.
"Are you going into town?"
June asked. She nodded again, tentatively petting the pig.
"Did you remember your cell phone?"
Henrietta shook her head. I blinked in surprise.
"She only texts," June said in an aside to me. "Would you like me to call Gibson and see if he can give you a ride?" she offered.
Henrietta hesitated and then nodded.
"I'll do that," June said, pulling out her phone. "This is my friend, Shelby. She is pursuing her PhD in social work. She would like to tell you about her project."
For the first time, Henrietta looked up. She had brown eyes ringed in wrinkles as if she'd spent much of her life smiling. June stepped away and I heard her dial the phone. "Hi," I said, suddenly self-conscious under Henrietta's quiet stare. I'm Shelby. Like June said, I'm studying small-town community and the hierarchy of neighbors for my dissertation. I have a survey for bootleggers. I don't know if you have a computer." She continued to stare blankly at me. If you do," I fished a card out of my back pocket. "This is the URL, I mean the web address for it. I'd love your input. You don't have to do anything but type," I promised. Reluctantly, it seemed, she took the card. "It would really help me out," I told her. There was no response, just those wary brown eyes. "Is Gibson your friend?" I asked. Her unpainted lips curved slightly and she nodded again. "I like him too," I confessed. "He's nice. His brother Jonah is my roommate and I really like him." Henrietta paused and then, to my delight, flexed her arms, pointing to her biceps. I laughed. "Yes, that's Jonah." She nodded more warmly now. Inspired and curious, I pressed on. "Do you know the Kendalls?" I asked quietly. The ghost of a smile flickered away as quickly as it had come. She shook her head vehemently. "No, no, no." "Gibson will be here in 2 minutes," June said, returning to us. "He was out at the lumber mill." Henrietta, studiously avoiding me now, crouched down again and began to pet Catherine in slow, soothing strokes.
28. Jonah. Crickets and tree frogs provided the backdrop to my evening as I pulled up the spreadsheet I was working on and adjusted the number of reps. Once a week, I went through all my personal training clients, checking their routines, their results, reassessed goals, adapted as necessary, lather, rinse, repeat, victories and failures, constant adjustments to keep everyone moving in the direction of their goals. Night had fallen, and with it came a crisp breeze cool enough that we'd open the front and back cottage doors for the airflow. Usually, I worked at the dining room table. However, tonight, I was sprawled on the living room floor with a puppy sound asleep between my legs. Billy Ray had exhausted himself chasing butterflies around the bush in the backyard this afternoon. His chin rested on my shin bone as if he couldn't bear to be separated from me. Shelby was in her corner of the living room, squinting at her laptop, headphones at full volume, glasses perched on her nose, constantly shuffling papers, tapping pens, jiggling feet. I could tell she liked the work, was energized by it. I liked watching her work. Hell, I liked watching her. There was something about her that drew me in and held me there. It was a cozy scene, a quiet Thursday night with a dog and satisfying work. I had to admit, it was nice having someone to share it with. Nicer still to know that my mom was here in Bootleg Springs, that she'd be here for my birthday Saturday. A quiet cookout here at the house. That was the plan. I'd never been big on parties, not with a single mom trying hard enough as it was to fill both roles. Even as a kid, I recognized that making sure mom knew she was enough for me was important. It was easier on us both to keep the celebration simple. Turkey burgers, grilled veggies, cold beers on the porch while the sun set. It sounded just about perfect. For once, everyone that I cared about happened to be in the same spot. I liked that feeling. Shelby sighed again, and I wondered if her arthritis was flaring up. I fired off an email to Doris with some cardio and flexibility outlines for the upcoming week, and then started on my newest client, one Shelby Thompson. My gaze flicked back to her. Her shoulders were tight, hunched. Long hours spent sitting usually led to poor posture.
a problem common to most. Unfortunately for my pretty roommate, a hallmark of ankylosing spondylitis was the fusing of vertebrae, which could lead to spinal deformity. First order of business would be a short stretching routine designed to be inserted into her writing and research schedule at regular intervals. As I toggled back and forth between spreadsheet and how-to videos, she yawned loudly, the headphones muffling the sound to her own ears. Billy Ray let out a corresponding yip in his sleep and snuggled closer to my leg. I liked getting my hands on a new athlete, liked pointing them in the right direction. For most people, a few consistent tweaks made vast differences in their lives and goals, and I hoped it would be the same for Shelby. She was a researcher at heart, an observer. But judging by the reams of data she'd collected for her paper and her lack of progress on the actual writing, she had difficulty turning that research into action. That's where I could come in. She'd read up on triathletes and training, yet her efforts on her own had been haphazard and inconsistent. Shelby was on my watch now. It was up to me to give her a program that balanced her work, her training, and her condition. It was the kind of challenge I appreciated, and I had a feeling I would enjoy working with her closely. While she frowned over interviews and academic journals, I pulled together a schedule for the week: running, swimming, a bike ride to gauge her abilities. I penciled them into my own calendar, too, before emailing the finished product to Shelby.
"Did you just email me from the living room floor?" she asked with a laugh, slipping off the headphones. Leaning back in her chair, she stretched her arms overhead.
"All of my clients are getting emails from me tonight," I said, closing my own laptop and sliding it to the floor. Billy Ray grumbled in his sleep.
"I know I'm showing bias, but I find him to be the cutest puppy I've ever seen," she said, staring fondly at the dog.
"I agree with your hypothesis. Did you have a chance to work on his write-up?" I asked. She cringed.
"Not yet."
Minnie Faye had offered to help us find a permanent home for Billy Ray if we were willing to foster him. We were supposed to be writing a profile that she could post on Minnie's Meow Meow House's website.
"There's no rush," I said. "It's probably better if he has time to get used to living in a house. Maybe let him get more consistent with not peeing all over furniture."
The first few days of having a puppy had been an eye-opening and excessive paper towel-using experience.
"I think that's smart," Shelby said, brightening.
"How's the dissertation coming?" I asked.
It's like writer's block for academia. I've collected more data and information than I could possibly use. The entire mammoth of a concept is outlined. I just can't seem to write the damn thing," she complained. "Plus, I found another project to distract me."
"Besides me and the dog and your training?" I teased.
"Seeing all that research at June's into the Callie Kendall thing really sparked some interest," she confessed. "First of all, the situation is a researcher's dream. Years of articles and conspiracy theories and the last 12 or so months of developments."
There it was, her disappearance into facts and figures, the distance she put between herself and the people involved. "There is a lot of material there," I agreed, organizing my own papers and files into a stack.
"Plus, I just got a vibe from the Kendalls."
I stopped what I was doing.
"What kind of vibe?" "I used to be a social worker," she said. "Sometimes you'd meet someone or you'd walk into a home and it would just have dirty fingerprints. Like, appearances were normal, but something beneath the surface was off."
"That's what you felt in the 5-second conversation with the Kendalls?" I asked, intrigued.
"It made me wonder, Were they ever suspects? And if they were, what exonerated them in the eyes of the law? I'm hoping it's not just because Judge Kendall is a state judge. Bad people can have good jobs and be very good about hiding their bad.
I'm not doubting your instincts, I prefaced. But those people lost their daughter in a very public way and have gone through hell in the last 12 months. Maybe that's what makes them a little off.
A little off, Shelby repeated triumphantly. You feel it too. You're just too polite or too guilty to really think it.
Guilty?
Your biological father is a person of interest. You and your siblings all feel some level of responsibility, which, however unnecessary, is understandable. You're all good people. Good people feel bad about things. Bad people don't.
The hair on her arms was standing up, and I wondered if she was cold.
How about we put it all away for tonight? I suggested. It's getting late, and you haven't had dinner. I'll make something. We can go over the schedule I sent you, and maybe watch some TV or a movie?
Her eyes lit up behind her glasses.
Can I pick?
Sure. Under Billy Ray's watchful eye through the back door, I grilled chicken breasts and roasted a foil pack of vegetables. While I cooked, Shelby opened two beers and got the plates and silverware ready.
Did you know Gibson knows Henrietta Van Sickle?
She asked, poking her head out the back door. I nodded, inserting the meat thermometer into a chicken breast.
Yeah, I think she sometimes cuts through his land on the mountain when she's roaming. Sometimes he gives her rides into town.
He picked her up at my parents' cabin and took her in, she said.
Do you think they bond over the whole hermit thing? I asked, pulling the meat off the grill.
Maybe, she said. I gave her the link to my survey and asked her to fill it out.
Those would be some interesting answers, I predicted.
Henrietta thinks you're pretty buff, she said.
I thought she didn't talk.
Shelby grinned and made a show of flexing her muscles.
She didn't have to.
Women, I teased. She sniffed the plate with suspicion when I carried it into the house.
It's chicken. You like chicken.
I like breaded chicken with dip that's main ingredients are fancy chemicals, she complained.
You're doing a great job with your training, but your eating could use that overhaul, I reminded her.
It's not that bad, she shot back.
Oh, it is. Just try it.
I hefted the fork at her, and she turtlenecked away from it. I stepped in, cornering her against the kitchen counter.
Come on, Shelby, just one bite, I said, moving in slower with the fork.
It's just vegetables, nothing scary. She pinched her eyes closed and opened her mouth. Before she could change her mind, I swooped the fork into her mouth. She chewed in tiny, frantic motions, her nose under her glasses wrinkling. Then she cracked one eye open. She looked at me suspiciously.
That wasn't horrible, she accused.
I know, I said smugly.
What was it?
Sautéed peppers and onions.
But I don't eat peppers and onions,
she argued. I shoveled another forkful in her mouth while it was open. She chewed with less haste, then took the plate from me.
Oh, why does this taste good?
She wondered out loud.
Is it because I'm starving? Maybe because I didn't make it?
She speared a bite of chicken and popped it into her mouth. I waited.
Oh my God! This is so superior to dino nuggets! What the heck, Bodine? What else have I been prejudiced to?
I laughed while she shoveled nutrition into her face.
Slow down there, slugger.
I made up a second plate. Dining room or couch? I asked.
Couch.
We sat and ate our dinners, watching a terrifying horror show. After we finished our food, Shelby slid her feet into my lap.
I rested my hand on her smooth shins, resisting the urge to skim higher. It was comfortable, relaxed, even though I was paying more attention to the feel of her legs, the smooth texture of her skin, the way her lips parted in anticipation as she watched TV. Oh, boy.
29. Shelby. If an invitation to a girls' night out on a Friday at the Lookout was any indication, I'd been officially inducted into Bootleg Spring Society. Scarlett, Cassidy, June, and Lula, the best massage therapist in the county, were waiting around a table near the dance floor for the round of drinks it was my turn to fetch. I'd spent the morning working out, then a picnic lunch with my parents and Billy Ray, and wrapped up the day spending hours building charts and graphs for the dissertation that was going to drag on forever and ever. Pushing back gainful employment and essentially wasting all that money I spent on education. My frustration had risen to the point where Jonah made me go take a nap with the puppy. Tonight was a very welcome respite. The bar was crowded with regulars and summertimers. Peanut dust rose up from the floor from shells crushed by boots. Good-natured arguments were brewing around the pool tables. I'd been in town long enough to know that the good nature often turned bad if left alone too long. Usual, Nicolette, in her I'm fluent in three languages, English, sarcasm, and profanity t-shirt, asked from the other side of the bar. Yes, please, and around for the table, I yelled. I waited while Nicolette made the drinks and watched the fun unfold around me. It was a rowdy country band on the tiny stage in the back. They had a long-legged, blonde fiddler. Just inside the door were two tables of Bootleg Springs elders, gossiping about everyone who walked in. Bargoers ranged in age from the newly minted 21 to the generous side of 80. It was an eclectic microcosm of the community, a concentrated drop of everyone that made Bootleg, Bootleg. I wished I would have brought my laptop to encourage people to take the survey. I'd gotten over 200 responses, which was an impressive sample in a town this size. And with every question answered, I learned a little something new about community. I was still missing the hook for my paper. There was something I was looking for without knowing exactly what it was, but I'd know it when I found it. The thread that would tie all my work together. "Here you go," Nicolette called, sliding the drinks across the bar to me. Cassidy appeared at my elbow and took half of the bottles and glasses. I followed her back to our table. "Did we miss anything?" I asked as Cassidy and I passed out the beverages. "Only 20 or 30 more pictures of Potbelly Catherine," Scarlett said with amusement. June retrieved her phone from her pants pocket. "Would you like to see a timeline of Catherine's first bath?" she asked, already flipping through photos. "Hang on to those, Junebug," Scarlett interjected. "I've got myself a few questions for Shelby here." "I've got a question for you too, Scarlett. Why haven't you filled out my survey yet?" I asked, taking a sip of my fresh gin and tonic, my second and last of the night. Alcohol and inflammation were kissing cousins, as Jonah had explained. "Why haven't you slept with my brother yet?" Scarlett countered. The music was loud, but not so loud that a couple of nearby tables took interest in our conversation. I leaned back in my chair. "I've indicated my interest," I told her. "And?" Lula pressed. "And nothing yet," I said with a dainty shrug. I kept the kisses to myself, also the sharing a bed thing that we'd been doing since Billy Ray joined our little family. Sleeping next to Jonah hadn't led to anything besides sexual frustration on my part. Being in a man's bed and still not having sex made me seem not very efficient. Scarlett let out a groan. "What was that for?" I laughed. "You'll have to forgive our Scarlett," Cassidy said. "She's a little impatient." "I put two people with tons of chemistry in close proximity, and you're telling me that nothing's happened yet?" Scarlett was incredulous. "Sometimes it takes more than chemistry," I pointed out. Someone bumped my chair from behind, a young guy in a hurry to get his pretty girl on the dance floor. I watched his enthusiasm and envied the girl. The truth was, Jonah dragging his feet on my offer was starting to dent my pride a little. He hadn't even tried to kiss me again.
I just don't understand it, Scarlet complained. You two like each other just fine. You're attracted to each other. Consenting adults living in the same house, and you still haven't gotten naked. This doesn't make any sense.
She slammed her beer down on the table in frustration. Not everyone is as comfortable going after what they want as you are, Scarlet, Lula reminded her. I watched the young couple two-step their way across the dance floor with eyes only for each other. I didn't need that, not now. Maybe someday. But for right now, I was too busy for those yearning glances and the kind of affection that would eat into every waking hour of my day. But a little healthy sexual gratification? What was wrong with that? Maybe I came on too strong, I hypothesized.
Did he find you naked in his bed with a can of whipped cream?
Cassidy asked. I shook my head.
Then you didn't come on strong enough, Scarlet said, slapping the table.
I don't know. I don't think that a physical relationship should be this difficult to initiate. Either we both want it or one of us doesn't, and in this case that would be Jonah.
Your hypothesis is flawed, June said with a frown.
The band slowed it down with a ballad, and couples melted onto the dance floor and into each other's arms. What's so flawed about it? I asked June.
Just because an individual doesn't rush into a sexual relationship does not indicate disinterest.
Junie's right, Scarlet nodded, patting her friend's shoulder.
Is Renee the reason he's not knocking around your bedroom door with his pants around his ankles?
Who's Renee? Lula asked, crossing her long, long legs. Seeing as how half the town had already heard, I saw no harm in letting Scarlet repeat an abbreviated version of Jonah's story about his former girlfriend.
That's just about the saddest damn thing I've heard all day, Lula sniffled into her drink when Scarlet finished theatrically.
And that is exactly the reason why he should be jumping into Shelby's bed, Scarlet insisted.
He needs to get past this quicksand and start opening himself up to new opportunities.
Perhaps Jonah is experiencing anxiety at the thought of entering into another physical relationship, June mused.
Well, sitting around thinking on things don't get a damn thing done now, does it?
Scarlet complained.
He needs a good push.
I thought about that for a minute. I thought about everything. I was a thinker, a data collector. I was not a doer by nature. I didn't take action. I observed. And observing wasn't getting me into Jonah Bodine's bed. I sucked on my straw, surprised when I came up dry. I'd declared my interest. He'd reciprocated his. Maybe we both just needed a little nudge over thinking and into doing. I opened an app on my phone and typed up a bullet point to remember to research seduction techniques. On stage, the fiddler kicked up her hand-stitched cowboy boots, flashing her long legs under a short denim skirt, her long blonde curls bouncing under the stage lights. Jonah would have noticed her. Heck, any red-blooded American man would have noticed her. And then there was me, in my geeky glasses, my lack of makeup, my wardrobe that existed for only two purposes, working out and sitting on my butt in front of a computer. I made it too easy to miss me, to skim over me and see only pretty fiddlers. This has given me a lot to think about, I told the table.
Are you seriously taking notes right now? Scarlet asked, amused.
Let us know if you make anything happen, Cassidy said with a suggestive eyebrow wiggle.
Do not feel obliged to keep me updated, June insisted.
All right, I've answered your questions, I said, tucking my phone away. Now, tell me when you're going to take my survey, Scarlet.
I will take your survey when you bag my brother, she said, crossing her arms smugly.
Only in Bootleg Springs.
Now that Scarlet's done selling off her brother into sexual servitude, Cassidy said with a grin, I have some news.
We all perked up, leaning in to hear over the sounds of boots stomping and drinks being drunk.
Bowie and I are getting married, y'all.
We continued to look expectantly at her, waiting for the actual news.
We made that assumption when you accepted his proposal, June observed.
Correction, Cassidy continued. Bowie and I
are getting married next month.
Scarlett's screech drowned out June's cordial congratulations and the band itself.
How are we going to find you a dress, a venue, a band, and a bartender in 1 month, Cassidy Ann?
Scarlett demanded, shaking her friend by the shoulders and then hugging her tight.
There y'all are.
Leah May hurried up to our table and drew up a chair.
I had to follow the sound of Scarlett's screams to find you. It's packed in here tonight.
What took you so long? Cassidy asked.
Oh, nothing much, just drawing up some sketches for a certain somebody's wedding dress, Leah May said smugly.
Give them to me right now, Cassidy said, making grabby motions with her hands.
We talked wedding plans and futures, bridesmaids' dresses and honeymoon venues, but my thoughts were on Jonah. How I would go from sharing his bed to sharing his bed. Did he really want me? Or was he too nice to reject me?
Question. Where in your community do you feel the most welcome?
Rhett Gensler. The Lookout on a Friday night. It's got everything you need. Beer, pool, music, neighbors. Someone's always willing to blow off a little steam with a fight. Good times.
30. Shelby. Have any nightmares last night? I asked, sucking in a breath as we crested a slow, rolling hill on the road. My legs were on fire, my hands cramped into claws on the handlebar. I forced them to relax. But it was a good kind of pain, the kind of challenge to push through. I was learning the difference between what to push through and what to acknowledge. Last night, I'd introduced Jonah to my guilty pleasure, horror movies. He'd been a good sport about it.
Not unless you count waking up to Billy Ray's cold, wet nose in the small of my back, he said.
15 minutes after his rude awakening and a potty break for the dog, I'd woken to Jonah's morning wood in the small of my back when he'd climbed back into bed and draped an arm over my waist. I'd looked over my shoulder, and we'd stared at each other for a long, heated 30 seconds before Billy Ray realized we were both awake and made his desperate plea for attention. Jonah was annoyingly not winded. He looked like he could ride for 50 miles without getting tired. Meanwhile, I was struggling with sprint triathlon distances. A 750-meter swim, a 12.2-mile bike ride, and a 3.1-mile run. My illness made me more sore, feel more joint pain than the average healthy adult. But I was learning to pay attention and make better choices, thanks in large part to my sexually unavailable roommate. I'd slogged my way through a 500-meter swim this morning and was pleased with my improved time. It wasn't going to set a course record, but it was a hell of a lot better than what I'd accomplished on my own. We'd dropped Billy Ray off with Gibson this morning and headed out for a 10-mile ride before Jonah's birthday party tonight. And after the party, I was going to seduce the birthday boy. I would be showered, made up, hair styled, and sexed up. He would be putty in my hands. Wait, no. He would be achingly hard.
How you feeling? Jonah called over his shoulder.
I dragged my thoughts away from naked Jonah. 8 miles into the ride, and I was starting to think that maybe, just maybe, I had a shot at finishing next month.
Good,
I puffed. Sweat trickled down my back to the waistband of my shorts. It was a sensation I was learning to get used to and maybe even enjoy. I still preferred the swim. I liked sinking into the water, letting it muffle all my senses. But the bike was fun, too. Unless you took into consideration how much it hurt getting hit with a bumblebee as you flew down a hill. I had welts. I took the downhill, intending to be cautious, bumblebees and all, of course. But the speed, the wind that cooled my skin, made me brave. I let out a whoop of joy and hinged over the handlebars. Jonah shot a look over his shoulder and grinned at me. Together we raced down the winding hill. Enjoying the view that unfurled in front of me. Forest, thick and green, rolled out on both sides of the ribbon of asphalt. I caught a glimpse of lake off to the left. Saw Bootleg's church steeple in the valley below.
Dark clouds crowded in on the blue sky in front of us. And between me and the clouds was Jonah. He rode in perfect form. His calves bunched, biceps flexed. I couldn't see his face, but I knew he was smiling. A doer, an adventurer in search of fun. And that's what he wanted to share with his clients, I realized. I wasn't hunched over a pile of research pecking away at the keyboard on a beautiful summer day. No, I was flying with the sun on my face and wind lifting my ponytail. The road curved gently away from the lake, taking us deeper into the forest. We slowed as valley turned back to hill.
"Having fun?"
he asked, slowing down so I could ease up alongside him. "I was just thinking this was a more enjoyable way to spend a day than sitting in front of my laptop," I confessed.
"Not too shabby,"
he grinned.
"Water break?"
I nodded. I was not comfortable enough on these roads to reach down and make a grab for my water bottle. That maneuver was above my current skill level. I wondered if I could get one of those beer helmets they sold at Build-A-Shine for the triathlon and fill it with water. We pulled off the road at a trailhead that led up, up, up the mountain we'd skirted.
"Rain's coming in,"
he observed before taking a deep drink. Lord, he was glorious. Sweaty was a good look on Jonah Bodine. His athletic frame, warmed by exercise, was a sight to be appreciated, swooned over. He wore a short-sleeved training jersey that fit him like skin, and bike shorts that highlighted a particular piece of anatomy that I was trying not to stare at. "Think we'll make it home before that?" I asked, again tearing my gaze away from his crotch.
"Still 2 miles out. How fast can you pedal?"
he teased. A fat raindrop fell from the sky and landed on my chest.
Uh-oh.
And with that, the West Virginia skies opened up on us. "Let's go further in," he yelled over the slow roll of thunder. He gestured up the trail. We pushed our bikes into the trees and away from the road. He found a copse of hemlock trees that formed a low, leaky canopy. I crawled in behind him.
"Homie," I said, sitting down on a cushion of lost needles and other forest floor debris.
I unclipped my helmet and pulled my hair free from its low tail. I shook it out, fluffed my bangs. Just because I was stuck in a rainstorm in the middle of a forest didn't mean I shouldn't make a small effort with my appearance. I was, after all, on schedule to seduce the man tonight. Shower, leg shaving, unscented lotion so I'd be super soft to the touch, makeup light enough to look like I wasn't wearing any, and a cute outfit. Not lingerie. Lingerie brought with it expectations. Fun shorts and a daringly low-cut tank would be friendlier, sneakier, Scarlet had assured me. They were expecting a full report tomorrow. Well, June wasn't. And Scarlet probably didn't want any details, seeing as how Jonah was her brother and all. But I was still looking forward to this grand experiment. I was tired of doing nothing but sleeping in his bed. We had chemistry on our side. And judging from the morning wood Jonah sported this morning, we had biology, too. It was time to initiate a reaction. The rain was slower under the trees, but it was still soaking. My white tank clung to the psychedelic sports bra underneath, and my nipples hardened to points.
"Shelby?"
His voice was strained.
"What? Oh my God, did you see a bear?"
I whispered, scanning the forest beyond our bikes. Getting mauled would seriously hinder the seduction experiment tonight. Not spotting any forest monsters, I looked at him and noticed he was looking at me. "What's wrong?" I asked. He shook his head, smiling wryly.
"Nothing's wrong. No bears. I just thought now would be a good time to kiss you."
Another roll of thunder rumbled. This one I felt in my bones as Jonah's mouth, wet and firm, found mine. There was an urgency here, a beautiful, painful urgency. And if he was going to back off again, or we were going to be interrupted by, God, please, not a bear, I was going to develop the equivalent of lady blue balls. I wanted him so keenly it hurt. The ache between my legs went deeper than just flesh and muscle. It was visceral. I wanted Jonah to know he was wanted, to let me remind him what that felt like. Nerds interested in sociology and biology and motivation turned out to be rather excellent lovers. I prided myself on being good at sex. As if reading my mind, he dragged me to him, spreading my legs so I straddled him, his back braced against a tree trunk. His erection, that biological miracle of blood flow and arousal, nestled between my legs, causing the breath to catch in my throat. He felt ready. But I needed to know, needed to hear the words. "Jonah," I said, dragging my lips from his. "What?" He pulled me back, tasted me deeper, his hand fisted in my hair, and when I moaned, I felt the hard length of his shaft twitch against me. "Are you sure you want to?" I breathed. "I don't want you to feel pressured or to have any regrets afterward." He eased back an inch, far enough for me to see the amused curve on the lips I'd just voraciously kissed.
"I'm sure, Shelby. I want you."
"Hallelujah. That's convenient because I really, really want you," I confessed. He kissed me again, this time his hands skimming the outer curves of my breasts, my flesh beneath layers of shirt and sports bra and rain and sweat paid attention. I craved more. "You know what's not convenient?" I whispered, shifting against him just to feel his hard-on line up with my body.
"What's that?"
"Wet spandex."
31. Jonah. We stripped as best we could out of wet spandex and rain-soaked clothes. We tossed them over our shoulders and stood facing each other. It felt hedonistic to stand naked in the forest, to skim Shelby's beautiful body with my gaze. She looked like she belonged here, her hair long and curling in the damp, the mist that settled over the forest floor. A nymph, tiny frame, lush curves. Her waist and hips begged for my hands, and her breasts, creamy, pale perfection. Lush again, heavier than I expected, forming ideal teardrops with rosebud nipples. It speared through me, and I remembered what this felt like now. To want. But it felt sharper, keener somehow. Maybe it was the scene. Or maybe it was the woman. She looked her fill, wetting her lips. I felt her eyes roam my body, and I wondered which of us would be the first to cross the invisible line between us etched in the pine needles under our feet. Me. I wasn't conscious of moving until I stood before her, until I took her mouth. Only our lips touching, the rest of our bodies a breath apart. Thunder rolled long and low, vibrating between us and through us. Then she was drawing me closer, her breasts pressing against the muscle of my chest, fingers digging into my shoulders. Now I was free to touch her. I slid my palms down her neck, over her shoulders and down her arms, thumbs skimming the delectable curves of her breasts. My cock, aching and hard, was pinned against the smooth skin of her belly. I wanted so many things in the moment, too much. I wanted to feed on her breasts, making her nipples budded against my tongue, to feel her lips wrap around the crown of my hard dick, to slide two fingers deep inside her, to watch her come. To hear my name whispered when she came, to paint her with my own climax. Fuck. "Shelby," I said, pulling away from her eager mouth.
"Huh? Yeah? What?"
She breathed. Easing back, her tight nipples dragged lightly through my chest hair. She gasped.
"I don't have a condom."
Her eyes were wide, dazed.
Me neither.
We can't... A lifetime of safe sex lectures from my mother echoed in my head.
I'm on birth control. You haven't had sex in over a year, and I just had a boatload of blood tests a few weeks ago,
she said. I was afraid to say anything.
I don't want you to feel like you have to, I began. Jonah,
she said my name in exasperation.
I want to have sex with you, right here, right now. It's a green light. If you're sure, I said.
She responded by grasping my hand and placing it on her breast. I felt her nipple bud against my palm, and every rational, cautious thought dissipated from my head. Cupping both breasts, I rubbed my thumbs over her nipples and reveled in the sigh that broke free from her. The rain was light and cool on our skin, but my blood was hot and roiling beneath the surface. She used my distraction with her breasts to do her own exploring. She closed a clever hand around the base of my shaft and stroked up. Electric need pulsed through me as she pumped me from root to tip. I pinched her nipples gently, and she bit my pec. Then she was sliding down my body. I watched her sink to her knees in front of me, her mouth inches from where my cock hung heavily. My nostrils flared as I forced air into my lungs, and then she was closing those perfect pink lips around the head of my dick. I'd forgotten this, how slick and sweet a woman's mouth was. Shelby's mouth, because, again, this was different, special. I couldn't take my eyes off her as she, seemingly enthralled with my taste, licked and sucked her way up and down my cock. This was heaven on earth, I thought, fisting my hand in her hair and fighting the urge to thrust into that sweet mouth. I held back, knowing if I gave into the urge to fuck her mouth, her throat, I'd lose myself there. It had been too long, my endurance wasn't what it once was, and Shelby was very, very good at what she was doing to me. She groaned her disappointment when I pulled her mouth off me, but I silenced it when I took her down to the ground. A bed of leaves and pine needles and discarded clothing. Eagerly, I closed my mouth over a breast, sucking, sampling, savoring. Her knees fell open, welcoming me, and with one hand, I trailed a path up the inside of her thigh. She shivered against me, encouraging me with those sexy little moans. How had I thought I wasn't ready for this? I could have missed this. And this, I thought, sliding the tips of my fingers through her wet cleft. Every inch of our bodies was wet from the rain, but here, where I probed, it was different. Thicker, hotter, and oh so tempting. I sank two fingers into her as I sucked rainwater off her other nipple, crossing two items off my list. She bowed up off the ground against me, driving me insane with her reactions to me, and when her fingers closed around my cock again, I let myself go just a little crazy. I thrust into her grip, driving my fingers into her sweet pussy in time. Our breathing was hard and fast. Her eyes were glassy and half-closed. She opened wider for me, inviting me deeper, and I thrust into the knuckle, holding her there.
Jonah,
her teeth chattered.
I want you,
she hissed. I could feel her muscles tightening around my fingers, felt that ache echoed in my own groin. Fingers and hands were good, but we both desperately needed more. It was biology, pure, raw, primal. I pulled out of her and took her hand away from my erection. Hold on to me, I instructed. She did as she was told, slipping her hands behind my neck, linking her fingers. I settled my hips between her legs, the tip of my cock brushing the wet, welcoming folds.
Impatient now, Shelby bucked against me, and I reveled in the feel of my cock slipping over her clit. Leaning in, I allowed myself another lick at her breast, and when she bowed back, when her knees fell open, I drove myself into her. Our shouts of triumph, of awe, caught on the rein. I was inside her, gripped by her slick, velvety flesh. Muscles quivering, I dug my toes into the ground so I could stay buried inside. Her nails bit into my back, and she chanted words, nonsensical sounds, softly as she fought for air. This was nirvana, this moment of two bodies joining after the teasing, before the fulfillment. This was a recognition of sameness. She flexed, tightening around me, and I had to move then. Withdrawing, I paused, savored. Then decadently slid back inside, needing to feel her close like a fist around me.
"How does it feel?"
she whispered. "So good, Shelby. So fucking good," I promised her, moving again, loving the drag of her flesh over mine. Was it special because it had been so long, or was it because it was Shelby, my roommate, my client, my friend?
"Oh, don't you dare stop or come to your senses," she pleaded with a laugh.
I flinched as the laugh had her tightening further. Sweat already dotted my forehead, and I knew I couldn't hang on forever. I kept my thrusts measured, controlled, focusing on the beauty of the joining, even as the need to go harder, faster clawed its way up my throat. She hitched her legs higher up on my hips and bucked into me. I wanted to give her what she needed, what she craved, what she chased. I just hoped I could hold on long enough. I thrust harder, and she murmured her approval against my neck. Her breasts, those lush curves, were flattened to me, and I wished I could taste them again. I settled for slipping a hand between our bodies and caressing that soft skin, that taut nipple. She liked it.
"Yes, Jonah. Oh, yes."
She was breathless. And I was pummeling into her now, pinning her to the forest floor with fast, vicious strokes of my cock. But she welcomed the speed, the need, the greed, encouraged it with the way those silky inner muscles danced over the veins of my cock. She was leading me toward a climax I wasn't sure I could survive. I needed to get her there first. With regret, I abandoned her breast and slid my hand lower. As I thrust into her like a warrior, an animal, my thumb slicked over her sensitive bud. Her body tensed, every muscle, and her breath stopped. I bit at her neck, her shoulder, still thrusting, still circling that beautiful little clit. And then she came back to life under me as her orgasm detonated. I felt her come, closing fist tight around my cock, her hips undulating to chase down the waves that racked her body. I couldn't hold out a second longer. As she clamped down on me again, I felt it race up my spine, stabbing through my balls, and then I was coming harder than I ever had before into her as she teased and squeezed every drop of my release from me. She was still coming in gentle, distant pulses when I collapsed onto her, sealing our orgasms together. 32. Jonah. There are few things more awkward than having sex for the first time and then walking in on your own surprise party. I was pretty sure what Shelby and I had been up to was written all over our faces and tangled up in her hair, judging from the dried pine needles that were still shaking free. "Surprise!" My mother, the Bodines, the Tuckers, and the Thompsons bellowed when we climbed off our bikes.
"Well, there goes round two," Shelby said under her breath.
Once the rain broke, once we'd dragged our wet clothes back on, we'd pedaled like hell for home, for a shower and a second shot at each other, this time in bed. I stared longingly at the front door. Between it and us were over a dozen people, a pig, and a puppy, ready and waiting to celebrate my birthday. Shocked, I slapped a stupid smile on my face and waded in to accept the congratulations. I could tell by the smug look my sister was shooting in my direction that she had guessed exactly what Shelby and I had been up to. After accepting the first round of congratulations, I escaped for a 5-minute shower, during which I thought of nothing but how it felt to be inside Shelby. I turned the faucet all the way to cold until my hard-on finally gave up. Apparently, now that the dry spell was over, I was going to be walking around sporting wood all day, every day. By the time I made it back to our front lawn, the party was in full swing. They'd certainly put quite the effort into it. Someone had strung lights around tree trunks. Portable picnic tables were set up covered with white tablecloths. Gibson was manning the grill. Billy Ray sniffing around his feet with Catherine the pig. And Shelby, well, Shelby was relaxing in a hammock with a lemonade just on the outside of the action. I made my way to her and gave the hammock a nudge. She opened one eye.
"Shower free?"
she asked. My back to the festivities, I trailed a finger up the inside of her thigh. There were so many things I still wanted to do to her, with her.
"It is. Did you know about this?"
I asked.
"Do you think I would have insisted we come back here for round two if I knew there was a yard full of people waiting for us? This is the most disappointing surprise party I've ever been to,"
she teased. "We'll make up for it tonight," I promised.
"What's that they say about a bootleg party?"
she mused.
"Ain't no party like a bootleg party."
"'Cause a bootleg party don't stop," I finished. "But this one will stop, at a reasonable hour, too, if I have to fake food poisoning to get them out of here."
"I'm looking forward to your fake explosive bowel issues later tonight,"
she teased. She held a hand out to me, and I pulled her out of the hammock.
"I'm going to shower. Go make nice with your guests before we kick them out."
"Oh, hey, Shelby." She paused. I took a step closer to her so no one could overhear. "I'm going to make sure I'm the most memorable summer fling you've ever had in your life," I told her. She grinned and bit her lip.
"I just might hold you to that."
Shelby waved over her shoulder, and I wished more than anything that I was following her up those stairs.
"So, were you surprised?"
My mother and Scarlett approached, looking smug.
"Shocked," I said. "I thought this was going to be a quiet cookout."
That didn't start for a few more hours and ended at a reasonable hour.
"Your mama was telling me how you never wanted a party or a fuss over your birthday. Why, Jenny, did I tell you that he neglected to tell us that it was his birthday last year?"
Scarlett said, dishing the dirt.
"You mentioned that," Mom said, winking at me. "And I just couldn't let another year pass without giving Jonah a proper birthday party. He's only owed 31 of them,"
Scarlett said. It was oddly sweet, still incredibly inconvenient, but I guessed I could put forth the effort to appreciate their work. When Shelby returned in a frothy sundress that teased the eye as it floated around her thighs, I was engaged in a horseshoes battle with my brothers.